Welcome to A Higher Branch, a source of practical and powerful information for busy people dedicated to boosting their personal health and professional performance. I'm your host, Sam McCall. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of A Higher Branch. You know, over the years, I have learned more from people than I have from reading books, which is saying something because I read a lot of books. And every now and then, I come across an individual who is doing something so extraordinary that I feel compelled to invite them to A Higher Branch to share their story and life wisdom with our community. So today, I sit down with Sam White, Chairman of Loan Market. For those of you who don't know, Loan Market is one of Australia's largest and fastest growing retail mortgage brokerage. And it is not bank owned. It is family owned and operated, just like everything else with the White family group of companies, including Ray White Real Estate, which, as we all know, has over 1,000 branches worldwide. Now, most of you know that my day job is as a banking and finance lawyer. And whenever I mingle with my tribe, I swear to you that every time Sam White's name comes up in conversation, people always spoke about him with such warmth and respect, not just his employees and suppliers, but even his competitors. So in this interview, we get personal and talk about the eight areas of life, and in particular, his take on family, work, learning, and wealth. So sit back, listen, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Sam, welcome to our Higher Branch community.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So, of course, I'm talking about Sam White from Loan Market. You're the chairman of Loan Market. And we have something in common because we both launched our business in 1995. Now, for those of you who don't know, Loan Market is one of Australia's largest and fastest growing retail mortgage brokerages in Australasia. So you've gone into Asia as well. And the unique thing about this business, and is like most of your other businesses within the White Group, and I'll talk about that, is that it's family owned, family operated. And we're going to talk a little bit about Sam's take on how to work and how they've managed to build such an amazing family dynasty, but at the same time, growing a business large, but keeping the soul and spirit. Speaking from experience, it takes very special qualities to do that. So we're going to get Sam's learnings on how to do that. So if you're in a small business yourself and looking at growing, hopefully we can unlock some of Sam's learning on how to grow your business. So Loan Market is also in the stable of businesses within the White Group, including Ray White Real Estate, which has over 1,000 branches throughout the world, predominantly in Australia, which is phenomenal. And that's still run by Brian and Paul, I believe.
Yeah, so Brian and Paul are the chairman of the business. My brother Dan is the MD, so he's really in the last sort of 12 months, he's really, it's been a bit longer than that, but the last 12 months particularly, he's really been taking the reins of that business now.
Awesome. Yeah. And how's he doing?
I think he's doing fantastically well. And, we're in the middle of COVID, so this is sort of June 2020, and it's the challenge in the real estate sector, I think, has been pretty significant.
Yes.
A lot more than in our part of the world, in the finance sector. And so I think he's done a terrific job. And like every crisis you go into, it's sort of a chance really for him to put his, you know, stamp on the business. And I think he's been really effective in that.
Well, he has huge shoes to fill because the business has been going since 1902, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
But before we went online with the camera, we spoke offline a little bit about, you know, A Higher Branch, our framework. Yeah. And so, you know, we have the eight areas of life, which is what you need to focus on and how they each fulfill a fundamental human need. So for those of you who are new to our community, our growing community by the day, the eight areas of life, you find them on ahighbranch.com. And they are the, of course, your health is number one. Number two is your love, as in your relationship, your personal relationship with your partner. Three is family. Four is work. Five is friendship. You know, six is learning, seven is wealth, and eighth is charity. And each one of those areas of your life fill a fundamental human need: health for energy, love for intimacy, family for unconditional love and support, work for fulfillment, friendship for belonging, learning for growth, which is what we're doing here today, learning from an entrepreneur, a leader in his field. The seventh, wealth is for freedom. And eighth, charity is for contribution. And if you're lucky enough to have a job which adds a lot of value to others and something we're going to talk about, that can be your contribution. But one of the things I wanted to talk about with Sam is that from speaking to a lot of people in our industry, you blend your life beautifully across these eight areas. Now, I'm not saying you're perfect, and you told me offline, hey, I'm not perfect with this, but you recognize when you do go off and you're, say, spending too much time at work and neglecting family, and you know how to get back on there, you know, get back in balance. But if we look at, I want to focus on family first, because the White family is really is a blueprint for how families should operate. Now, I don't know whether, you know, there has been family conflict over the years. Inevitably, there is in any business. But how have you managed to, you know, cohesively work as a family unit over, you know, 120 years?
It's a great question. We definitely had conflicts along the way. And but there's been a lot more positive than the negatives in the whole process. I think the biggest thing is probably going to be how we communicate. And I think having respect for each other and for what everyone does. And yeah, the values that we brought up with obviously are fairly similar.
What are those values, if you don't mind?
Yeah, we haven't really codified them in a document, but the concept that we are custodians of a business, we're not owners. We're not sort of, it is not a business that someone's going to sell and capitalize and realize any value out of. It's a process that we're coming in as custodians for a period of time before someone else. So we don't really look at it. Yeah, I remember someone asked, my dad said, oh, gee, you must be, this is in the middle of some recession, said, oh, look, you must be upset that your business value has come off or whatever. He said, look, we don't do valuations, we don't look at the value. It's about how is the business traveling, how are we providing value to our people. And that's what's important. Obviously, financials are important, but the capital value or anything else is not there. So I think we think of ourselves as custodians of a business. I think about longer term, that reputation is important, that it's easy to lose it. And it's important that in everything we do is sort of what is the long-term implications of this. And I think that's one of the fortunate things about a family business is you can afford to take a bit of a longer term view on some issues. And so and it's an interesting sort of mix between a pride in what in the group, but also sort of not attaching too much pride to an individual, more as a collective, if that makes any sense.
Total sense. Yeah. And so you're about leaving a legacy rather than having an exit strategy.
Yeah.
Which is where 100%. Most people go wrong in a business.
It was always that we used to go to like a business school sort of thing. They always talk about exit strategies, and always felt uncomfortable. They didn't quite know.
Yeah,
we never really talked about it. We never planned for it, and so I always thought maybe we're missing something in that process. And I've got a lot of friends, obviously, who've built some great businesses and either bringing in external capital or selling or listing. And I respect them a hell of a lot. I don't understand the. I can't relate to that process. Because I haven't thought a lot about it, to be honest.
It's not in your DNA.
It's not, and I'm not sure whether that's a weakness or it just probably is what it is.
I think it's a beautiful thing because it allows you to take, like you said, a long-term view, rather than short-term gain to meet shareholder interests who are only interested in next year and the year after. Well, let's talk about work then for a second, because I know you pretty well when it comes to work. When I say well, what I read about, and when the Royal Commission, you really stuck your neck out, went into bat for the whole industry, not just for the loan market brokers, just for the whole industry. And I that took a lot of courage. And first of all, I want to thank you for doing that because I'm a huge supporter of the broker distribution model. When it comes to work, every time I come across one of your brokers, employees, you know, I know Neil, got to know him pretty well because his wife works at a high branch now. She loves it there, by the way. And the words, you know, tight-knit, family always come up, warmth. You do some incredible things that a lot of business owners don't do. Every time, and you have a big business, so you have, what, 650 brokers?
In Australia.
In Australia.
Yeah.
But you have this thing that you invite your anyone that joins the Low Market family, you have them over your place for dinner. You get to know them personally.
That's pre-COVID. Now we're trying to work out how we catch up.
How you do that? Yeah, yeah. But tell me, why do you do that?
I think it's important for people to understand the values of the business, and it's a good chance for people to say, look, you're not a number. That people are, every broker for me is our core customer.
Yeah.
They are someone who puts their faith in us. We make lots of promises when they come on board. And we need to deliver on them. So it's a chance for me to meet them and talk about them, understand what's important to them, and a chance also for them to be able to say, well, if I've got a problem, ring me anytime. And that's important, I think. And our business is built on the relationships we have with people. That's all it is at the end of the day. How well are they going to look after their customers? Are they the type of person that really is passionate about looking after customers? And what do we need to do to support them? And I think things like having them for dinner sort of reflects the fact that this is about a relationship. It's more than about just we've got a commercial relationship. It's about we are now sort of part of a group together.
I love
And it goes beyond just the commercial relationship in my mind.
So business is personal for you, which is my motto too.
I think it is. Yeah. I think everything is, to be honest. You make decisions. Obviously, there needs to be commerciality to things, and there needs to be logic. But at the end of the day, your lens is: do I believe in what this person's telling me, and are they going to fundamentally deliver on what they say? And that's the thing. Everyone makes that decision on anything, and part of that for me is it's not so much the recruitment process. Our relationship starts when someone joins, and then how do we make sure we deliver on what they want? And if we don't, that they can come and say, Sam, look, this is not working.
Yep.
I find it much better when I'm hearing about problems than when I don't, because I know they're there. I just don't know if I know what they're there. I know someone's dealing with them. Then I can relax.
Yeah. See, this is one of the main reasons why I wanted to have this conversation with you, so our community can learn. What attracted me to this interview was the fact that business is personal for you, and you don't hide behind layers of bureaucracy. Within your company, you actually, it's a flat model. People go direct to you. Not afraid to open up your home to people, you take their calls. I just love that style of doing business. And, whenever I put up the 8 areas of life model to corporate executives who are a little bit burnt out, and they look at that model and they say, Sam, I don't have enough time in the day to devote to these 8 areas, But when you have your approach to doing business, it allows you to be authentic at work, with your friends, with your family. So you have the same face, you're the same person across those areas. So that allows you to blend your life. So I call it life blending. So in other words, you can spend an hour in the gym on your own and then go and hang out with a friend for an hour and then go and hang out with a work colleague for another hour brainstorming. That takes 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But if you have a friend from work that you work out together, and whilst you're working out together, where it's jogging or walking, you're brainstorming, you're doing 3 hours of, blending in 1 hour. So it's very efficient. And that's what you do really well. I don't know whether you knew that or not. That's my impression from the people I spoke to. They say, this guy's authentic. You see him, whether he's at the cricket, at the footy, with his friends in the boardroom, with his wife, with his family, with his kids, is the same.
Yeah.
And that's rare.
I appreciate you saying it. I haven't thought about it. It's exhausting not to be, you got to put on something you're not. I found that too hard, to be honest. You think, I should be more like this person. I've read this book. I need to be more like that. I think there's a spectrum on everything, and everyone finds their own part of that.
Yeah.
And if you live who you are, you sort of accept there's some shortcomings, try and compensate for them as best you can, preferably with better people. And then, if you are who you are, and I think that's important. Because it's too hard to be someone else. You can, and that's different from improvement. That's sort of fundamentally sort of saying, okay, I'm this person here, I'm this person here.
Yes.
I don't think you can do that anymore. I don't think you can do that in a small business because you're always on.
Yes.
This whole thing about 9 to 5, I've never really, to be honest, understood how that works as much because, and particularly with going into this new world now, I don't know how work hours are going to go whether people are going to say, I don't want to work between 9 and 3, right? Between 9 and 12, but I'm going to work between, 9 and 12 during the day, but I'm going to work at, 9 to 12 at night, maybe. Now, I'm not quite sure how all this stuff plays out, but I do think structure and neat boxes is sort of harder to do in the future. There's a, as you mentioned, blending. I think there's a lot more of that going to happen.
Totally.
In all our lives.
I totally agree with you. That's music to my ears because people who try and do that just never quite achieve it. Every 24-hour period is a chance to bookend it with a holiday, time with family, with friends, with work. And you can't just say, okay, well, this is a face for this. Now I'm going to check out and do it. Yeah, so what you're saying is absolutely spot on. It's my philosophy as well on life. And I think anyone that's watching or listening at the moment, and there's a lot of small business owners and large business owners that listen and watch, they're looking for that direction because most of them say, well, how do I clock off and get into family? And I say, look, if you're with family and you get a phone call and surgeon, take it.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean after you finish, be present. You can be present and still do that. You don't have to tools down to be present. Mm. And when you're talking to someone on the phone with a customer, you know, be present. Mm. So this is something I actually learnt. I've known this for a long time, but Michael Jordan, I don't know whether you've seen that Netflix.
I haven't seen it. I've been told to watch it.
It's phenomenal. You will love it, right? And the biggest takeaway that I came from watching that series of 10 episodes is this guy is a mystic. This guy is a yogi. He lives in the present. The biggest takeaway line, he said, I'm not going to worry. Why should I worry about the next shot before I even take it? Because he lives in the present and kids live in the present. Artists live in the present, musicians, and they produce their great work. So if you're in business and you're watching this, don't be afraid to blend all areas of your life. You know, that's the only way you're going to grow your business.
Yeah.
As long as you're having fun doing it. Now, on that,
mine's never been a neat kaleidoscope of, it's in my looking back at it, there's always been something that's been out of whack a bit. And then it's just sort of once the balance starts and the wheel starts shaking a bit because it's not perfectly balanced, then you know it's an area you need to pay attention to. And I think it is important to sort of check back in on that because you do have too long and suddenly you do really get out of alignment. But I've found it hard to sort of have everything equally balanced at the same time. It's sort of more this is out of balance, needs to get back in, and it's a constant adjustment process. So for me anyway, I found is
that's life.
Yeah.
You're never going to be evenly in balance. It's like meditation. Your mind is going to wander.
Yeah.
The beauty is bringing your mind back. And the same with work, with life balance. It's you will, you know, go, okay, I've just spent 3 hours sitting. I need to now bring it back to balance. The key is to be conscious of that.
Yeah.
That's one of our other frameworks is Framework for Conscious Living, which is outside of the scope of what we're going to talk about. But just stay on work for a second because I really love what you've done in technology.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is a beautiful thing because you can leverage it to go from a small business to a large business very quickly.
Yeah.
So tell us maybe by using your industry as an example, but how important do you think technology is for business at the moment?
In our business, so overall in business, I think it's obviously critical. And you know, the problem is everyone said technology would save you money. We just keep spending more and more money on it all the time. But it does obviously produce a lot of opportunities and creates new areas.
So what things have you rolled out in your business?
So things like for us around customer, we've got new broker platforms. We've got new tools for how brokers can deal with customers. And the ability for in our business, it's sort of a matter of how do you blend the individual experience of a person who's got, you know, a real passion for helping a customer, a deep understanding of what that customer's what products might suit that customer for that particular point in time, and how that they may need to evolve with time.
Right.
So it's how do you get that knowledge that's in a person's head, and combine that with a really good customer experience sort of technology platform that enables them to sort of collaborate together to get the right outcome for the customer, and sort of involving the customer in that, not just sort of, you know, saying to the customer, look, here's the solution. It's engaging the customer to help find that solution. And that's what we've been trying to build a lot, really customer engagement tools, and broker platforms. And more, I think, we need to keep going deeper in that. I think there's a real opportunity, speaking of open banking coming into play, and how that's going to change the ability for brokers to deal with customers longer term and be relevant to a customer longer term. So I think there's a lot of, I think tech is a real area where we're expanding aggressively. And even within COVID now, we've expanded our tech team and looking at it, doing that more. So, but it's not true. And I talk to some brokers about it, and they worry. They say, this is going to replace me. I don't think technology will replace brokers, but brokers who use great technology are going to replace brokers that don't. But the broker itself is still going to be important because humans are still going to want to know. I want to, is Sam, what he's saying, does it make sense to me? I want to question.
Yes.
I don't want a machine to give me an answer. I want to be involved in the process. And that's the bet we're making. And that's why it's important to us is to keep helping brokers be relevant as technology becomes more and more ubiquitous. Banks are going to go, I think, more and more digital in time. And one thing out of COVID I'm sure is going to happen is branches will become a bit less relevant. They're investing significantly in tech. That's going to continue.
Yes.
And how we make that a more efficient process for customers and for lenders is going to be pretty important.
So for brokers, some brokers have aspirations to become a bigger business.
Yeah.
How does a mortgage broker scale their business? Because goodwill is often attached to them, and every time they hire another broker, it's the same goes for lawyers, accountants. You know, I was speaking to a friend of mine who's a chiropractor. He says, as soon as I hire someone, train them, build them up, they leave and open up their own business.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult for them to scale up. So you may not have the answer to that, but a lot of business owners who listen to this as well, always thinking, should I just stay small? And there's nothing wrong with that. No. I tell people there's nothing wrong with being, having a practice rather than a business.
Yeah.
The moment you hire people and they start working for you, that's a business. Practice means you need to be there, to earn the money. So what is your advice to them? When should they consider going to a business?
So I think if you look at your team, at your employees, at your...
Some of them just have one or two employees.
Yeah, some have outsourced and have none. Yeah, no, technically. But if you look at it and say the value you provide to a person when they first start with you is as a rookie, they're looking for you for real direction, and for that, they will say, look, I'm better to have a certain commercial arrangement because you're going to teach me what to do.
Yes.
As that person gets better, and that'd be a combination of their own work ethic and their what they're doing, plus the support of the leader of that business, and the systems and process that business puts in place, that commercial arrangement should change so that as they need less from you because they're starting to become professionals in their own right.
Yes.
They should have a different type of relationship than they had with you when they first began. I think changing that commercial arrangement's important, firstly. And that's why you see people come in as partners over time.
So pay them more, effectively. Yeah.
Pay them more look at, people look at equity and all that type of thing for working together. And I think the other thing is what is the operating system that you're putting in place that will increase the value that you can give to a person, your business, a broker or an agent or a lawyer. And I think the more that you can wrap around, and one of the things we've seen is that a lot of good brokers don't want to put in place a lot of infrastructure and customer service managers and, whereas they'll look for the business owner for that. And can you keep providing them a better platform? Can they make more money with you than they can make on their own? In a lot of cases, they will. Because going out on your own means you've got to hire your own team or find your own solutions for that. And no longer do you just need to look after the customer, you now need to look after a broader business.
Not a lot of people like doing that.
Well, not every broker wants to be self-employed. And a lot of them, so for those who don't want to be, who want to have, so look, I want to look after my customers, but I don't want to have all the headaches or everything else. Can you give me a home that is effective and that reflects the value that I bring into the business? And I think there are a lot of people who'll do that more and more, particularly as systems become more important. The Royal Commission highlighted a number of areas where brokers can improve around process, expense analysis, a whole lot of things around that are going into the businesses now around responsible lending and best interest duty are going to mean that it's going to be harder to do this on your own, out of your own home. Coming and forming part of teams, whether they're you know, businesses sharing resources, whether they're employer-employee, whether they're partnerships or practices coming together. I think it's going to become more important to have scale and to share the cost of doing business. Because one thing I don't think, one thing that's clear, I think, in our industry anyway, is that regulation is not going to get less and it's not going to get cheaper. You're going to need to have better ways of staying safe in that process, in dealing with customers and dealing with regulators. And at the same time, we've got to keep finding ways to get better customer experience. And that's not just going to be about by signing on a piece of paper saying, yeah, Sam's told me all this stuff. It's going to be about going through a journey, which as you go through it, automatically does compliance for you. It's not something you have to do on a Saturday afternoon, you know, after the kids play sports. I've got to do my compliance files, you know, for last week.
Yes, yes.
You should have it done as you go. The system should do it for you. And that's what we've tried to build.
Awesome.
In terms of tech.
Yeah. No, I love what you're doing with tech. There's also something I heard the other day about the values or what you bring to your broker community. And there was four things. It was help them grow. Is that right? Keep them safe. And what are the other two?
Yeah, so there's four promises. So
four promises.
One of the things everyone kept telling me, you gotta, we're not aligned. You know, people said to me,
I love this because they apply to all. Yeah, you know, all industries.
So exec team sat down and they said, look, Sam, we don't really know exactly what's important to you right now. We're not quite sure what to focus on. And we feel as though there's too many messages that are going out and we're just not. And I've had that a few times happen. Like I think business goes through stages where you get it sorted out, then it gets to a point where it gets messy again and then sorted out. Anyway, so. We sat down and said, what are the promises we need to deliver to a broker? And we came up with four of them as a team. And the first one, and saying to everyone on the team, your job, all our jobs, my job, you know, receptionist job, four things we've got to do. And if what you're doing doesn't add to one of these four, then it's a problem and you need to find something different to do that's going to add to one of these four.
Perfect.
So the four promises are keep me safe, which was first one was save me time. So brokers have spent a lot more time on deals. So are we saving brokers time? Are we keeping them safe? Are we helping them find and keep clients? Or are we growing their business? So those four things. And so now when we look at a project, we say, which promise does that cover?
Yes.
What am I doing around those? And it's the good thing is it's become a bit of a consistent language now, which is good. People feel a bit more aligned.
Yeah.
And that was just saying, what are the promises our customers want from us, and how are we going to keep them? And then everything we talk about now is the four promises around that. So that's been one of the best things I think we've done in the last couple of years has been getting that nailed.
Yeah, love it. I'm going to pinch a couple of those
team. I'm sure we pinch it from someone else. So none of it's rocket science, right? It's just sort of
it's simple,
sitting down. And I found that's the other thing is, you know, it's got to be simple or else it's too – because – you know, I remember some people come up with stuff and I couldn't remember it. I think it's my business and I can't remember what we meant to do. How's anyone else going to have it? And so it's got to be simple and it's got to be that anyone can understand it, anyone can sort of pick it up and not have to go through reams and reams of explanations. And that's what we try to do.
Awesome. Now, without asking a question that sounds cliche, but I'm going to ask it in a different way, and that is, like, what is the number one tip you can give business owners to grow their business? And it's usually, you know, the tip that, I'll just stop there. I'll stop there and I'll keep it as a cliche. So what is the number one thing really that has worked for the White family in your business that you can share with that person that's listening now that has a business and that's thinking, what is that one thing that gives me that edge?
I think the key thing is, key thing comes to mind. How do you give value to a customer better than anyone else? And that requires you to think, who is my customer?
I was going to ask you, who is your customer?
So my customer is the broker.
Right.
And my customer is the broker who wants to grow a business. My customer's not a broker who doesn't want to lean in and because there's better models out there for them that don't want anything else. They just want a platform. We're not the right guys for you. But they're my customers, and that's what we need to focus on. And their four promises were designed around trying to get those, what's the value of those customers. So who's your customer and what do they value the most in what you do? and what are they prepared to pay for, and what and how do you deliver that type? So it's a few questions, but I think it comes down to that particular understanding. And you don't need teams to do that. You maybe it's an insight you have, but it's from those series of questions, you know, who's my customer? What value do they want? How do I deliver that value better than someone else? You then start to create a model and a plan. And that may involve staff. It may not involve staff. It may involve different sort of focus on areas. And I think the best things are the simple ones in my experience has been whenever I've made big mistakes, I've tried to get too complex.
Yes.
And I think it just came back, you know, the key role of every business is to find a customer who wants to pay for something. How do you understand what the customers want? How do you get the value to them? And then how do you then give it to them better than someone else?
So what do your customers value most about Loan Market, and what do they value most about you personally?
I think my customers expect me to be engaged with them. If I wasn't, they'd say I'm not doing my job. They expect me to advocate for them and to help them, you know, in understanding what their issues are. I'm actually not nearly the smartest person in our business. There's a lot better people who know the solutions to problems more than me. They don't expect me, I think, necessarily to solve their problems, but they expect me to find the people who can.
Yes.
But they expect me to lean in and understand what their problems are and to be keen to solve them. And they expect me to be committed to their success. That, you know, they pay us a commission, a fee, a franchise fee, because they want to know that the team that we put together is focused on helping them, we'll deliver those four promises, but fundamentally help their business grow.
Yes.
In terms of, so that's what I think my customers expect of me. What was the other question?
What do they value most about Loan Market, and what do they value most about you?
I think they value the fact that they're respected, that the team here is focused on delivering, on helping them succeed. We don't focus on distribution of other products, or, you know, we're not here to sort of, we're not, you know, people got head of distribution.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got our equivalent of that is head of broker success. They're just words, I know, but we're not about distributing anything. We're about broker success. So our head of sales is head of broker success. And the team is around a lot of our KPIs, a lot of our bonus structures around helping brokers. Are they hitting their goals?
I think there's a business lesson for those of you that are watching and are listening, and that is, you know, if there's a hint of government regulation that's coming in, you don't need to be wait till you're told to do something. If you're always acting in the best interest of the customer and you're looking to add value to the customer, being first to market to actually comply with new regulations that are coming in or should be coming in, or not even maybe flagged to come in, as a business, I think business leaders have also an obligation to be leaders, not just in running a business, but leaders in regulation, self-regulation.
I think there's no question that the trends we're seeing, broad trends around, you've got to be more transparent.
Yes.
You've got to be fairer. Yeah. You've got to be empower customers to make better decisions, more so than make decisions for them. Those big trends are the same in any industry, I think, and all the regulations going towards making sure that companies don't take advantage of customers that aren't informed, or
yes,
that, you know, and so if you can be thinking about in your business, how do you do that anyway? Because 90% of the regulation is actually right. 10% of stuff can be a bit painful. That gets a bit too edgy, or it goes off on a tangent. But the vast majority is appropriate. It just and tech needs to then come in to make it, because the other problem is it can be really cumbersome.
Yes.
So hopefully tech makes it smoother. But what they're trying to, what are the regulators trying to get at is right. Hey, if you can adopt some of those broad principles of transparency and fairness and prove that in your dealings, because that's the thing about BID. BID's not about changing how brokers behave. BID's about proving how you behave. And that's a very different thing.
I think
BID's going to cause brokers to do things much differently, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because most brokers believe that.
Yes.
But if they can't prove it, every time, then they've got a problem. And so being forced to prove it, I think, is a good thing. It shows you that, well, But don't just tell me, mate. Show me.
And that's what
I think most industry is going to happen. And the more you can get ahead of that, I think the better.
So if you're in business, the two principles that should guide you is transparency and fairness, and you'll come up with your own, you know, solutions for customers, but self-regulation. And I guess that's probably why Australia has become so successful in controlling the outbreak of COVID-19, because we went into self-regulation mode before the government imposed a restriction. As a lot of people don't realise that the curve started to flatten well before the restrictions came in, because people started keeping their distance. Yeah. People started washing their hands. That's an example of self-regulation.
So
I love what you said. If you have those guiding principles of transparency and fairness, that'd be your guiding light.
Yeah, I think the customer experience, like and one of the things you see in other industries, just how good their customer experience is. And I think, gee, how do we make that better? Because, you know, it still can be a painful process doing this and that business and doing that. And so I think trying to find out, which again is finding that biggest problem to solve issue, that creates all the opportunity. When you can solve those big problems, suddenly what was impossible becomes possible, and it becomes awesome.
Yes.
So that's where you got, you know, the whole thing about finding where those pain points are. And then once you get enough smart people focusing on something like that, or once you then suddenly I think things will change, and hopefully, you know,
better. Absolutely. That's always been my focus in my business at MSA Nationals. What are the pain points for the customer? And let's solve those.
Yeah.
And that's the quickest way to get from A to B in business.
Yeah, yeah.
Just solve the pain points.
100%.
Everything else is, it should be fundamental.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. So let's talk about learning, you know, as one of the eight areas of life. Learning is important for growth. How do you view learning, first of all, at work or with your family?
So I'm on the ceiling on our business. So if I don't develop, then the business can't, type thing. Because I won't understand the issues. I won't invest in the right things. I won't allow good people to come through. So if I don't improve, I can't expect the business to improve. Some of that's through books. Some of that's through meeting people, as you say, and talking to someone else and getting a great idea from somebody else. All that, I'm getting good ideas from brokers. Yeah, so good ideas come from anywhere.
So you're always learning.
Oh, there's a butterfly net around that. I generally try and go away for a week and do a course somewhere. And I've been doing that for a while. That's good chances to get away and think. And sometimes just get immersed in something. But most of the stuff comes from getting a butterfly net and catching the butterflies as you walk around.
It's a good analogy.
Hearing other people come up with some great ideas and what they do in their businesses. And I'm lucky with that I've just bump into good people that, you know, and often it's not direct, might not be direct copy what they do, but it'll be very much something based on what someone else has done, or it'll be a composition of three or four things that people have said at maybe different points in time that have just coalesced into something else that I can say to you I can see something like that working for us, but it'd work in this way.
Yes.
But it's very much based on someone else's idea.
Yeah. Because you have a very strong training program, don't you, in your own work?
Yeah. We try
as well as your own personal education. Yeah.
I think it's important that every company should be a good training business. You know, that whole thing about, you know, people say, if I train them too much, they'll leave.
Yes.
Versus saying, well, if I don't train them enough, they'll stay. And the whole thing about, what would you rather? Would you rather have a well-trained workforce that are in demand from other people and that you've got to work out how to retain them, versus I've got a poorly trained workforce that no one else wants?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's an easy decision to make. And I think training, it's skill development, because skills depreciate so quickly now. Like,
absolutely, you can become redundant two
it's
years.
So fast, it's so fast, which is great because you can also become something new in a short period of time. You don't have to So I think that depreciation is, if you're not constantly adding to your balance sheet of knowledge, you your depreciation becomes too quick, and your written down value of your knowledge asset becomes almost nothing.
Because a lot of people get too busy with life that they forget to stop learning, and you can't grow, which is a fundamental human need, without learning new things. How important do you think life education is, not just work education? Because that's what we stand for at a high branch. It's life education. We weren't ever taught at school.
I think it's all about how you, how you adapt to situations and how you persevere through things, how you try and stick at, how you interpret issues that happen. I think that's without that, then you can't do anything else, right? What you know doesn't matter nearly as much as either. Yeah, so that whole thing about EQ and IQ, and I think there's a big push around how do you develop your ability to adapt. And so to the extent that's about the broader learning thing, I totally agree. And we talked before about how people over time start to have different problems in their lives if they're not spending enough attention on those different areas of the high focus, as you say, then that becomes a big issue.
Yeah. So let's talk about wealth and wealth creation. It's one of our elements that we talk about, and it's not one we shy away from. You know, I think money is important, but I guess it's there's a difference between, you know, being rich and being wealthy. I always say the wise get wealthier and the rich get richer. But what is your definition of wealth, and what do you think of is money important to live a happy, healthy life?
I think it is. I think it's important. I don't know if that's right or wrong, to be honest.
No, I'm glad you called it out. I think
it's probably my prejudice against, but it's my experience, and maybe that makes me the wrong person to comment on it. But so I think money is important. I think I don't think about wealth or numbers or anything like that. I think about ability to go on holidays and that type of stuff. But to be honest, I don't think about it a lot.
Which is, I guess, the true definition of wealth in my books, because wealth is about having that sense of freedom where you're not accumulating money for money's sake, but it gives you that sense of freedom. But that sense of freedom can only happen when you define what your wealth is. Some people's idea of wealth may be, I want to own that skyscraper.
Sure.
And they're never happy until they own that skyscraper. Yeah. But other person will say, well, I'm happy to live in my fibro, home, and I've got my friends and I've got my family and I've got my barbecue and I'm happy, So the answer, I guess, is there is no right or wrong. It's how you define your own wealth. Yeah.
Well, I've had targets in my career to sort of do certain things. The doing of the thing, the achieving of the thing, is always more satisfying than the finance. If I had a target, say, own this or do that.
Yeah,
that bit is very fleeting, and it's the doing of the activity is always the stuff that lasts. So, there's been times when I've been wealthier and less wealthier, in cycles and all that type of thing, and I don't know. I don't think about it a lot in that sense anymore.
Yes.
I used to think about it a lot.
But I think it is, you're right, I think it is important.
Yeah.
To have a job that gives you satisfaction and also pays you, a living, the living that you want, the own standard of living that you want. So for people who are watching and listening, a higher branch isn't one of those academies where we say, money's not important. It actually is. Money is important. The question is how much money brings you the happiness that you're looking for, and it's different for everyone, so there is no right or wrong. Now, before we go, and I really thank you so much for spending the time, because I know you're a busy entrepreneur and you've got a lot on as well. I've seen some of your roadmaps for your technology builds and what you're doing with BID, and I think it's really exciting. And we'll certainly be paying close attention and hopefully learning for our business as well. But just a couple of questions that I don't have a repeat set of questions at the back of every interview like some people do. I come up with questions specific to the person I'm talking to. So one question that really, two questions, but the first one is, what is the best lesson that your mum or dad or both passed on to you? Mm-hmm. And the second one is, what is the most challenging period in your life that you've come across, and how did you overcome it?
The first one, it'd be a piece of advice my dad gave me. I remember going to him saying, when I was starting out, I was like,
yeah. Starting out in business?
Starting out in business. So I was sort of 21. I was a real estate salesperson at Robert Paddock. I was going to uni and I was selling real estate and a few other things. Anyway, I went in and I got this big problem and I outlined it, whatever it was. And he said, look, I said, what should I do? He said, I've got two things for you. I said, oh, this is awesome. So the first thing is, I'm really glad you're going through this. I said, that's good. And he said, and the second thing is, you're going to have a lot worse days than this. And that was his advice. And for some reason that stuck with me, is that, you know, things pass and, you know, a problem today will be resolved.
Yes.
So have confidence in that. The biggest challenge in my life, in sort of, I'm not sure if I can go through all of them, but one of the ones was, that might resonate with people, was the Royal Commission thing. That was one where I was really quite scared of what was happening and uncertain and didn't really know what to do. And one of the things from that I got was I got a lot of strength from the team and then you take a risk. And I remember I was so nervous and I did something on a Friday, first time I did something, it was going out on some commentary. And that weekend, I was just, I was so anxious. I was really worried about how this would be perceived. And then after a while, it started to get some positive traction. But for about 2 weeks, I was just so uncomfortable thinking I was going to ruin my reputation. I was going to be seen as a this and a that. And I was very anxious about it.
For those of you who don't know, the Royal Commission into the home loan. Mortgage broking industry.
Well, it was home into misconduct within the banking system.
That's right. Yeah, but it could have led to the complete annihilation of your business.
Yeah.
So yeah, it would have been a massive challenge and a scary time.
Yeah, a lot of people had a lot of their livelihoods on it. A lot of our franchisees, this was the worst thing that could have happened to them. What was being spoken about, and there were, anyway, I can go into a whole lot of it, but that's.
Yes, that's another story. But yeah. I love the advice that you shared, that your dad gave you. And the reason why I love that, and there's beautiful layers of wisdom in there. So he said, okay, you are going through a challenging time, but you're going to go through life with even more challenging times.
Yeah.
I guess that is the overarching message in that is that be grateful, you know, for where you are at this point in time.
Yeah.
Even if it's a challenging time, you can still be grateful for that time because it could get worse.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, you're living in a country where war is escalating or you have an injury which could get worse, because a lot of people will go through these tough times, or a business that's, dropped by 50% or has been shut down. Still, you can always be grateful for something. And so what he said there is just a beautiful thing, and I haven't heard anything like that before. It's like, but you are going to face even worse times. And as soon as you focus on the second part of what he said, you just say, you know what, I'm good now.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's all part of preparation, right? Each time you face an issue, it should give you confidence that you can face another issue. And
yeah,
some experience in how to deal with those, which becomes, I suppose that experience becomes wisdom in time. But at the time, it doesn't feel like that. It just feels, you know, you're going through a series of sleepless nights.
Yes. And it's part of the human experience.
Yeah,
Sam,
true.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Sam.
That was an amazing couple of hours we spent together.
Yeah, no, thank you. Good.
The time went really quick.
It did.
And thank you to everyone for watching and listening. Until next time, live consciously, my friends.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want to stay up to date with all things A Higher Branch and with the latest information from our incredible faculty of members and contributors, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast. And if you like to watch things, then head on over to our YouTube channel by the same name, A Higher Branch, and subscribe to that also. And if you want to go onto our mail list, where you will receive even more special premieres and some really special offerings, head on over over to ahirebranch.com and sign up to our mail list, where you will receive a free copy of my ebook, Guide to Greatness, but you will also be on the mail list to be the first to receive a copy of my next book, The Circle of Conscious Living, which is due out later this year. Anyway, thank you again for listening, and I hope to be with you next time.